saw something, there's been a revelation in it. And it just kind of arrested your heart, like you just sensed the real fear of the Lord that's been wrapped around it. Anybody ever experienced that before? I have that kind of sense with this. And so what I saw was, you guys know what a plumb line is? You know what a plumb line is? It's, for those of you that don't, it's, I mean, there's all kinds of shapes, but there's, it's a little piece of metal with a point on it that's on a string, and it's held from a higher location, and it's dropped to the earth, and you can use it in construction, so you know exactly, like if my hand was, I wanted to know exactly where in a straight line to the ground is, I would hold a plumb line, and because of the gravity, and it would drop exactly where my hand is. So the plumb line is a point from point A to point B in an exact straight line. And you can put a level on it. And so I saw that dropped right from here this morning. And I knew what the Lord was saying with that. Because what's interesting about a plumb line is it's dropped from someplace higher. And his plumb lines dropped from his throne. Right down to the earth. And I got this sense. You know when sometimes God speaks to you, I use the word God speaks, but I don't ever hear any words sometimes. It's just an impression, or all of a sudden I understand something that I didn't understand before. It was just boom. And now you try to put words to what you just sensed. Well, that's one of these. And so I saw that, boom. And then I got this sense. I'm going to try to word this right. Well, let me explain it this way. There are those, this is happening with our Constitution too, making it, and you may have heard these terms, living and breathing. In other words, that the Constitution changes. We are to change the Constitution with the times, but times line up to the Constitution of the United States as far as America goes. And I heard that in the same reference of the word, because there are those who are trying to make the word, the written word, living and breathing, in the sense that it changes with the times. So when I saw the plumb line hit from heaven to earth, it said, time aligns to my word. Thank you, Lord. A few announcements really quick. 2 weeks from today, we will not meet here in this building. We're all going to meet where? Blue Springs Lake, Shelter B. We are have a great time together, some worship together, and eat together spiritually and physically, and I love both of those. So that's 2 weeks from today. Victoria has landed in India, so she's there safely. I'm going to let you know that. Hurricane Irma is blasting Florida right now. Just had a severe one, as you know, in Texas and Houston. Let's pray for the people there. Could we do that, Father? Oh, Lord, I pray first and foremost that, Lord, that you would arrest hearts. That people would not just turn to others. That's great. To the government, fine. But people would turn to you. That eyes would be open, hearts would be receptive. God, all over this country, just not in the hurricane path, but all over this country. So we pray for the state of Florida that they would come as a state. You said you can win a nation in a day. You can certainly win a state in a day. That they would come into a saving knowledge of you. Father, that you would penetrate the government of the state of Florida. God, regardless of their political view, whether their religious view, that you would penetrate that government of that state, and it would begin to align with your plumb line. Father, I pray that for our nation right now, that our nation would return to the plumb line in which it was founded on. We would return to our roots in Jesus' mighty name. So, Father, we pray for safety for people, wisdom. God, pray for the first responders and all that are involved in Jesus' mighty name. Amen. Real quick word on ecclesia. We are not a church, because the word church doesn't exist in the Bible. That's why we're not church. It's been put in the Bible, but it does not exist. Jesus did not say he was going to build a church. He said he was going to build an ecclesia, which is his government. It's his governmental body on the earth to represent, as ambassadors, to represent heaven. It has both a legislative and a judicial wing to it. I'm excited for the judicial part. We're going to begin moving into the judicial, where the body of Christ for a long time, thou shalt not judge, have just completely warped those scriptures and took them out of context. God's called us to judge. Matter of fact, he's the great judge. We got a book of judges, and we're going to be judging angels forever. Amen. All right. Why did Jesus say he was going to build his ecclesia? Because we are his representatives, his government, to do what? Extend his kingdom rule in the earth, in every one of those seven mountains, in our realms of influence, neighborhoods, where we work, our schools. That's why we're there. We're not just there to get an education. We're not there to get a paycheck. We are there as his representatives to extend his kingdom. We are priests, but we're also kings. We focus so long on our priestly role. What's our priestly role? We worship him, we adore him, we serve him and others. What's our kingly rule? We are rulers with him in the earth. We have the honor and the privilege to rule with him. Pray, how did Jesus say? That his kingdom would come and what? His will be done on earth in this life now, not, you know, later, because it's going to happen. When Jesus returns in the natural, it is going to happen.
Yeah.
But now we have the opportunity and privilege to bring that. It's a bringing into where God, where Jesus is going to receive his kingdom and a full manifestation of that. So we're a priest and we're kings. We are so blessed in our congregation here. We have a very large congregation, but we're few in numbers. I mean, you know, when pastors, you know, because, you know, sometimes you get with them, how many people you have in your church? I said, we are a very large congregation. We are just few in numbers. And they do what you do. They laugh. But that's exactly right. And that's what I mean. We are extremely, because ecclesia has influence. Whether you feel it or think it or know it, you have influence. We are more powerful than the government of the United States. We are. Yes, right. And my grandpa used to call me a knucklehead, so thanks for reminding me. I actually acted like, well, I still do. But anyway, but honestly, we are so blessed. I've mentioned this once before. The Lord's assembling a group here that is just, I'm just amazed at, with natural talents, but also spiritual anointing and talents. Some have ministries already going on. A few weeks ago, we heard from Deborah and what she's doing. And I mean, just look at our worship team. I mean, this is amazing. You know, and we've got a couple that can lead when one steps out and it doesn't miss a beat. And no, it's just, we have preachers. We have people here that have so much revelation and understanding of the Word of God. It's amazing to me. In this large congregation, but few in number. It is amazing to me. Well, we're going to hear from another one this morning. How many of you ever heard of the term sustainable development? Oh, this is going to be good then. Woo! Amy is an expert in sustainable development. Amy, come on up. Amy Fox, she is going to give us a presentation. Hey, we need to understand. I don't really understand this very well, but we need to understand what's going on. Okay, and I know she's going to share a lot, but there are some terms like sustainable. That's a great term. I'm a term person too, a word person. It's like when I hear words, it's like, okay, now how do you actually define that? What do you mean by using that term? And some of these terms have wiggled their way into the body of Christ, and it's interesting. Amen. So, Amy.
Thank you.
Do you have a mic?
Yeah, I have a mic. Am I on? They told me to say a couple words. Usually I don't need a mic because I have a very loud voice. And what a wonderful way to come and give a presentation with beautiful praise and worship. And Pastor set this up beautifully. My presentation is going to give you information on how to rule as kings. So if you guys have a pen and paper, I want everybody to take a pen and paper out and take notes, because you're going to get lots and lots of information and you're going to go over it. And especially you younger kids. Because you know how I came up on this very topic? When my son was a junior in a Christian school. I read his science textbook, and he was being indoctrinated into the ideology of sustainable development. So you younger kids here, young adults, whatever, you need to pay attention and you need to take notes. Because if you're going to a public school, and that is high school, elementary, or college, you're being indoctrinated, and you need to make sure you have the information to confront that. So sustainable development is an ideology. That's what I'm going to be talking about. There's implementing documents, and the two most popular or widely spoken about ones are Agenda 21. Agenda 21 is short for the agenda for the 21st century, and it has initiatives or ideas to implement the sustainable development goals. It was updated in 2015, and it became known as the 2030 agenda. So we're going to take a little history lesson. We're going to go into the pathways of implementation and give you the tools to help you identify it. Okay, so in 2002, did you know Colin Powell went to a UN conference and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, President Bush and the American people have an enduring commitment to sustainable development." Did you know you have an enduring commitment to sustainable development? And do you agree with that? Ask yourself that question at the end of the presentation. Hillary Clinton in 2012 went to a UN conference and she said the only viable development is sustainable development. In 2015, when they updated the Millennial Development Goals, Barack Obama went to the UN and he said, "Today we commit ourselves to the new sustainable development goals." I'm going to highlight just a couple words here because I'm going to come back around to these words: data, behavioral sciences, and best practices. Not just happy with result with spending dollars for sustainable development, but actually achieving the goals. Okay, so we could go back in history all the way to Nimrod. We're going to touch on that a little bit later, but I'm going to actually start in the year 1987. So there was a commission, it was called the Brundtland Commission, and they issued a report, and that report was called Our Common Future. And they actually defined what sustainable development is. And this is their definition: development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. That sounds pretty innocent, doesn't it? But we're going to find out here in a little bit what is actually compromising the ability of future generations to meet their needs. So in 1992, at the Earth Summit, they actually codified this report, and it became known as Agenda 21. And here is a copy of it. Again, it's short for Agenda for the 21st Century. This is the blueprint to inventory, monitor, and control all natural resources and human activity. And I know that sounds like it's an exaggeration. It is not, and I'm going to repeat it. I want it to sink in. This is the blueprint to inventory, monitor, and control all natural resources and human activity. And if you want a little bit lighter reading, here is the children's version of Agenda 21, made to get in elementary classrooms. The earth groans every time it registers another birth. That's what it says in this book. The earth groans every time it registers another birth. So in 1993, the UN summit was followed up with the biodiversity assessment. This goes into great detail on what is compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. So on this screen right here, I have the page number, and I've listed some of the items that are not sustainable. Grazing of livestock is not sustainable. modern hunting, logging. Again, this is the page number on this side. Fossil fuels. What did you use today to get here that uses fossil fuels? Gasoline. Economic systems that fail to set a proper value on the environment. So you can read that as capitalism. Okay? Private property is not sustainable. Population growth, consumerism, fragmentation of habitat is not sustainable. The Judeo, and that's how they spell it in this book, Judeo-Christian tradition is not sustainable. So are you getting a bigger picture now of what this agenda is about by just knowing those few things? This is the visual of sustainable development. It's known as the triple bottom line, the three E's, or the three pillars. I'm going to talk a little bit about each one of these pillars, but you can't really see it for some reason in this slide right now. But where these three pillars overlap, that's your sweet spot. You're balancing all three pillars, and that's where you're creating sustainability or sustainable development. Economy. Americans, psychologically, right now, I'm going to stop, and I want you to do something. We're going to take off our American hat. However we identify as Americans, our G-high hat, our cowboy hat, or whatever, we're putting on a global hat right now. This is a global agenda, and we have to understand it through those terms. So in the economic portion of it, notice this is one paragraph that I took out a few sentences. This is a class they teach in Santa Clara. Notice in this paragraph, they use the term ethical two times. An ethical approach to sustainability. An ethical approach to sustainability suggests that society has an obligation to restrain wasteful use of resources among the affluent. Now, who's affluent? You're going to find that out here in a little bit. And it also has a special obligation to foster economic development. That sounds good, right? Economic development. But they put a caveat in here for the poorest of the poor. Now, how do they define the poorest of the poor? Go back to Our Common Future, and they defined the poor meeting the needs of the current generation. The needs are needs of the world's poor. So what we're talking about is we're talking about searching the globe, finding the poorest of the poor, and meeting their needs. There's nobody in the United States that would qualify. Okay, we're going to talk about equity. What do they mean when they say equity? Equity is the right and opportunity of all people to benefit equally from the resources afforded us by society and the environment. It's between people within a country. It's between people of different countries. It's between different generations of people. So we're talking about intergenerational equity. Between people, nature, and the environment. So we're talking about species equity as well. And the baseline is always the environment. So if you have a conflict between any of those pillars, the environment will always trump. This is a global agenda. This was on the copy of USA Today a couple years ago, and I went to the grocery store and saw it in the window, and I knew exactly what I was looking at. This particular article was talking about the Chinese government plowing down some of these little villages, and they're building this high-density urban development. You see it right there? Okay, does the UN have a policy on land? Yes, they do. Land cannot be treated as an ordinary asset controlled by individuals and subject to the pressures and inefficiencies of the market. Private land ownership is also a principal instrument of accumulation and concentration of wealth, and therefore it contributes to what? And that's one of the things sustainable development must fix. Agenda 21 calls for the communal ownership and management of land. So our founders, let's compare and contrast this global system and what our founders thought about private property. Government is instituted to protect private property of every sort, this being the end of government. That alone is just government, which impartially secures to every man whatever is his own. James Madison. And I love John Adams. So short, so sweet, succinct. Property must be secured, or liberty cannot exist. I like to poke around in antique stores. And I went into an antique store, and they had a 1940s copy of the Communist Manifesto. And I like bargains, so God's really good. It was priced at 15, it was marked down to 5. But I was reading it in the car because we were doing a little road trip, and if you haven't read chapter 2 of Communist Manifesto lately, you really need to do it. But this line really stuck out to me. The theory of the communists may be summed up in a single sentence: abolition of private property. Now, does sustainable development line up with the ideology of the UN's policy or our founders' policy more closely? Absolutely. So let's talk about a little bit of UN. I'm just going to touch on it briefly. It was created in 1945. 50 countries met in San Francisco. They signed the UN Charter. The conference was chaired by Alger Hiss. Now, what do we know about Alger Hiss? He was a communist. He co-authored the founding charter, and he served as the first acting UN secretary. So in 1992, when they codified Agenda 21, Maurice Strong was the Secretary General at the UN, and this is what he said. Current lifestyles and consumption patterns of the affluent middle class involving high meat intake, use of fossil fuels, appliances, home and work air conditioning, and suburban housing are what? Not sustainable. Now, who do you think he's talking about here? High meat intake? Fossil fuels? People like our cars? Suburban housing? He's talking about the United States. So what happened? You can get online and Bush 41 signed Agenda 21, but it was soft law. They tried to adopt it and pass it in the legislature, and you can get on YouTube and watch Nancy Pelosi talking about it on the floor. It did not pass. They didn't have enough votes. But the globalists will not be detoured. So in 1993, President Clinton created the Presidential Council on Sustainable Development, and their directive was to translate all the guidelines of UN Agenda 21 and a public U.S. policy. And his special advisor, J. Gary Lawrence, who was also a city planner of Seattle, he said this: participating in a UN advocated planning process would very likely bring out many who would actively work to defeat any elected official undertaking local Agenda 21. So we will call our process something else, such as comprehensive planning, growth management, or smart growth. And you probably think, oh, this is America. We have our Constitution. We don't have a bunch of these fringe people that would really implement this stuff here. but I'm just going to highlight some more egregious quotes. Now, this one is from John Holdren. He was Obama's science czar. He's also a good friend with Ehrlich. Do you remember the population bomb that was out in the 60s? They've collaborated on numerous projects. But he said, economists must design a stable, what? Low consumption economy in which there is a much more, what? Distribution of wealth than in the present one. Redistribution of wealth both within and among nations is absolutely essential if a decent life is to be provided for who? Every human being. This guy, he was the president of the National Audubon Society and also a board member of the Sierra Club. And he said, we reject the idea of private property. He was a huge advocate of common open space, which goes to the communal ownership and management of land. And then here we have Earth First. This is a radical environmental group started by Dave Foreman. And he also, we're going to get into this a little later, but he actually came up with the Wildlands Project. But he said, Earth First says, not until mankind gives up the European notion of private property and the use of Earth's resources for our own purposes will we cease our war with Earth and be at harmony with her. Now, you can also get on YouTube, and they have prayer services out in the forest asking for forgiveness from the trees for cutting the trees down. Here is just a screenshot, just in case you think I'm exaggerating this stuff. I'm not. This is a screenshot right from the United Nations, and it says right here, sustainable development implementation here, decision-making, that the Presidential Council on Sustainable Development was created to implement a sustainable development plan for the United States. It's right here in black and white. So the Presidential Council on Sustainable Development, one of the things they did is they gave the American Planning Association a few million dollars to come up with a legislative guidebook to get in planning departments in our local communities and into universities to get this done. And that is how we get the term smart growth. The name of this book is called Growing Smart, a Legislative Guidebook. That's where the term smart growth comes from. It is the favorite building style for sustainable development. There's various ways, pathways of implementation. The big one is grant money, but they're using the Endangered Species Act. They're using these comprehensive plans, and so that's what we're going to go into right now. The implementation of sustainable development is happening from the federal level because of a result of the Presidential Council on Sustainable Development. All cabinet-level federal agencies have adopted sustainable development as their decision-making framework. So this is one of the programs. It's actually called Sustainable Communities. And you can't really see it. Can we make it so you can see the slides a little bit better so people can see these lighter slides? If not, that's okay. We'll suffer through. But this is an interagency program, Department of Transportation, HUD, and the EPA. So what they're doing is, the feds like to call it taking down silos, information silos. So before, if you took federal monies and you took EPA money, only EPA had jurisdiction. Now, through programs like this, with its interagency, you take HUD money, you get DOT and EPA. Okay, at the regional level, okay, now I can't even advance. Okay, regional level. This is a huge component of sustainable development. They call our current jurisdictional boundaries antiquated. So one of the ways they try to destroy our jurisdictional boundaries is regional decision making, where more and more decisions will be made by elected, unelected, faceless, nameless bureaucrats that you cannot hold accountable for their decision making. The regional councils of government are huge in this. We have 19 in Missouri. And does anybody know which regional council we live in? Do you know what it's called? Mid-America Regional Council. Most of their website is color-coded. You can't really see, but this is economy is the red, environment is the green, and equity is blue. Now, have we seen this before? That's the three pillars. That's the three pillars. Yes. And of course, this is creating sustainable communities. Okay, now it's not advancing. And I could spend 30 minutes just on this slide, the regionalism. I'm giving you highlights, and if we have time, you guys can ask questions at the end. But we got a lot of ground to cover. Here is St. Louis. St. Louis, their regional council is East-West Gateway. They have a PH regional plan for what? And they're actually in St. Louis. They're trying to merge the county and the city together. So see, you keep creating these big blocks. And the Rockefellers are really, really involved in this. Okay, there's a slew of NGOs, non-government organizations, that implement this stuff. And many of them your city has professional relationships with. Whenever I started researching sustainable development, this organization kept coming up. It's a non-government organization based in Bonn, Germany. It stands for International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. And I live in Lee Summit. Lee Summit is a pretty traditional town. And at the time, you could get on their website and you could click on their members list and find out who were members of ICLEI. And they were created in the bowels of the United Nations to go into local communities to help the community implement sustainable development. They have a city plan that they take the city on this, a milestone program. And I could have fallen off my sofa. I still remember where I was sitting. Lee Summit became a member of ICLEI in 2009. And they have many programs. This is a flyer for their STAR program, and here's their founding partners. And I want to point these out. The National League of Cities. The National League of Cities gets funding from George Soros. Thousands of American cities are members of National League of Cities. And they started partnering with ICLEI in the early 2000s. They've changed their logo. What do you think that is? The three pillars. This partner down here, this is Center for American Progress. Have you heard of Center for American Progress? That's a George Soros group. John Podesta headed up Center for American Progress before he went to the Obama administration, and then he was helped try to get Hillary elected. Okay, here's Columbia, Missouri. They're also members of International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. There's about eight cities in 2000. in 2010 that were members of ICLEI. Now, you can't, they've taken their member list now, and you can't really tell if the who's members anymore. This is Missouri Municipal League. Your legislators are invited to meetings and encounter MML lobbyists all the time. This is from their policy handbook. What do they say about sustainable development? MML supports policies, legislations, and incentives and lend themselves to sustainable development. Such what? Policies and legislation will help establish Missouri as a competitive area with cost-effective what? Public systems. Here's EPA. I wish you could see this stuff. I actually have this flyer. Hang on, I'll get it so you can see it. So I went down to Mid-America Regional Council, and they had a meeting. And there was a gentleman there from Blue Springs. They were going to have a land audit. And who was going to be paying for the meetings? The EPA. We're paying for this stuff. They're taking our money, and we're paying for this. Okay? They had two I went to these meetings. They had representatives from Smart Growth America. What do you think Smart Growth America is? It's an organization that lobbies for smart growth, the favorite building style of sustainable development. It's heavily funded by the Rockefellers and the Ford Foundation. The Rockefellers also, if you want to take a note and look this up sometime, an organization, it's called America 2050. Have you ever seen the Hunger Games, where they have mega regions? That's what they're moving to. Clarion Associates, they are a consultant. Your city hires a consultant, and they do meetings, community meetings. They already know what the outcome is going to be, but they need it to look like it has community buy-in. So you're invited to meetings, all these meetings, because they want this to be your plan. Okay? Clarion Associates, they were also hired. They're out of Colorado. They were hired by Lee Summit. And they created a overlay document, a land use overlay document. It's called the Corridor Development Overlay. Here it is right here. I'm going to talk about it here in a little bit. Here is National Realtors. Smart growth, form-based codes. Form-based codes help achieve smart growth. Here is a screenshot from, this is Columbia. Columbia happened to use Clarion Associates, too. Imagine that as their consultant. It also says that they want to go to a form-based code, and they want mixed-use development. Here is, I apologize, this was a screenshot. As far as I know, Hobby Lobby is not part of this. But this is Topeka. Again, EPA paid for the meetings. They took block grant money from sustainable communities, and they're deciding they're going to go with smart growth principles. Okay, when they talk about ethics, they are talking about the triple bottom line, but there also is a religious component to this. Mikhail Gorbachev, Stephen Rockefeller, Maurice Strong, you know, our buddy who said suburban housing isn't sustainable, fossil fuels isn't. They decided that this ideology, this philosophy, needed its own Ten Commandments. So they created the Earth Charter. They commissioned an artist out of Vermont, and the Earth Charter resides in the Ark of Hope. Does that remind you of anything? This was the very first meeting they had with the Ark of Hope. Look at them. They're praying around the Ark of Hope. It's a wooden chest. It was created as a place of refuge for the Earth Charter document, an international people's global community, global citizens, for building a just, sustainable, and peaceful global society. Now remember, we have our global hat on. As Americans, we think peaceful. You know, there's no debate on that. But in a global society, there is a debate. If the globalists say that no peace will come while nations have their sovereignty, that's a problem for me. If the Muslims say peace will not come unless the world is ruled by Sharia, that's a problem with me. Then we have, again, all these nonprofit NGO groups that love to give out awards to your city, to individuals. You get patted on the back. Yeah, you're doing a great job. Keep going. One of these organizations is the Social Venture Network. They foster high-impact collaboration that build a just, humane, and sustainable world. This is mainly for what they call social entrepreneurs. So social entrepreneurs are the ones who use the triple bottom line. Okay? We decided to build a new paradigm, one in which business operates to add value to society without compromising the well-being of what? Future generations. Okay, next slide. Next slide. Okay. This agenda is not just Democrat and it's not Republican. What it's coming down to are the patriots and the globalists. This gentleman, Eric Greitens, is our governor. He is a social entrepreneur, award-winning social entrepreneur. And I could do a 40-minute presentation on Eric Greitens. Social Venture Network gave Eric Greitens an award for being an innovative entrepreneur for building a just and sustainable world. Greitens will instill a sense of urgency to rediscover a balance between success in business and responsible leadership as what? A global citizen. Okay, next slide. You guys having fun?
Yeah.
It's heavy stuff, isn't it? But it's stuff we need to know. Because you know what? We need to go to the mountains. And this equips us to understanding. Okay. PowerPoint presentation from Columbia. Have we seen that before? That diagram? Absolutely. And they took a quote from North Carolina. So I put the slide in Illustrate. It's everywhere. Focus on physical, economic aspects of the city as well as social issues. That's the three pillars right there. Physical, sometimes they'll use a little bit different words, but always look for them. Physical, economic, social equity. It's right there. Always look for them. Okay, so let's pretend like I'm Clarion, okay? And I'm coming to your local community. And I've invited you to this meeting. And I'm going to use some words, and I'm going to say, how many want a sustainable community? Yeah. How many want a livable community? Yeah. How many want quality of life? Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about what they really mean. Okay? Okay, a sustainable community is a community that provides all of its own needs for air, land, food and fiber, energy and resources. That's a sustainable community. You can meet all your needs within that particular community. Livability, livable. Now, this definition comes right from the Department of Transportation. You take federal grant money, you're going to be building smart growth. Because this is the definition of livable. Being able to take your kids to school, go to work, see a doctor, drop by the grocery store or post office, go out to dinner or a movie, and play with your kids at the park. Let's read it together. All without having to get in your car. Did you know that's what livable was? And you just raised your hand. You wanted a livable community. Placemaking, creating livable physical environments supportive of what? Walking, bicycling, social interaction. What happened to our cars? Remember, fossil fuels are not sustainable. And we're going to build the houses real close together with the front porches right up to the sidewalk so you can visit with everybody walking by. Social interaction. Activity center. Okay, here's the M150 corridor, which passed. The mayor broke the tie against us. It was a 4-4 vote, but we had Clarion come in. This was what the city wanted. So he voted against us. He broke the tie against us. So this document is on the M150 corridor in Lee Summit, Missouri. But activity center, see these little purple little flowery things right here? Those are the activity center. Now that sounds like you're just going to go and maybe, you know, play ping pong with a friend or some exercise, right? Well, your regional councils of government who are planning regionally have identified transit corridors. So along the transit corridors is going to be mass transit. What do you need for mass transit? You have to have smart growth. You have to have density. So cities are changing their land use documents that require smart growth. So these activity centers are the transit stations or stops supported by high density development. That's an activity center. Quality of life. They're going to all say quality of life. What's quality of life? It's always in context of the community, not the individual. And you also have to take into account future generations. So in Lee Summit, we did kill it in committee. It was the Sustainability Action Plan. They actually identified quality of life as reduction of greenhouse gases. Now, how many in this room, even in your 10th on your list, down to the 10th one, would have ever said reduction of greenhouse gases is quality of life for me? Wilderness. Wilderness. Wilderness is an area where the earth and its community of life are untrammeled by man, where man himself is a visitor and does not remain. So Dr. Michael Kaufman, this is the wild... a doctor who studied the global biodiversity assessment, he says, if we were to implement it, this is what the United States would look like. See the red area? That's the wilderness area. No human activity. The yellow is limited, highly restricted human activity. Now, the red is designed. These are the corridors for wildlife. The wildlife cannot encounter humans because they have to have room to travel from one side of the continent to the other side of the continents so they can adapt to global climate change. What is that purpose? Because what this whole thing does, it elevates nature above man. Governance. This is a very important term to understand. They do not need global government. All they need is global governance. It is not government. It is the framework of rules, institutions, and practices that sets limits on behavior of individuals, organizations, and companies. Okay, so let's play a game. Freedom of choice. I use the term freedom of choice. Now think in your mind what you think that means. Okay? This is what it means. People should be able to choose where they live and do business as long as they pay the identifiable cost of those choices and do not impose unaccounted for costs on other people or nature now or in the future. Whoa. And who's going to decide? Who's going to decide all this stuff? Yeah. Sustainable transportation. Here's Tennessee. The first approach starts with the premise that we need to convince people to change the way they live. You think that's government's role? To convince the way you should live? Here's Colombia again. Livable, sustainable. I call it the People's Republic of Colombia. They're really into it. Complete streets. They adopted a complete streets policy. You'll hear that a lot. Or a livable streets policy. Lee Summit adopted livable streets. Blue Springs, livable streets. They thought it sounded better calling it livable streets. Okay, so complete streets or livable streets, they believe that we have an over-reliance on the automobile. They want to shift from dedicating roadway for motorized vehicles is to promote bicycling, walking, mass transit, traffic calming mechanisms. How many of you have been seeing more of those roundabouts go in? That's traffic calming mechanisms. Okay, green infrastructure, reduce automobile trips, vehicle mile travel, and reduce emissions. This is a screenshot from a slide. It's urban growth. And I want you to see this line here. You can't really see it very, very good. But it says gradual conversion to pedestrian uses. Because it's impractical to do it all at the same time. So this is incrementalism, kind of like the frog in the pot, you know? We were in Arizona, and we drove by the sign, and I made my husband turn around so I can go take a picture of it. But this land, obviously, they rezoned it, and it says that it's requiring mixed use. Urban village, they make it sound nice, it's a village, including high-density residential, commercial, office, and retail development. I'm going to skip that. These are some of the things. A project Lee Summit's doing, it has all the verbiage in it, all of it. Placemaking, you know, less parking, etc. Okay, this is from Mid-America Regional Council. You know how I said that they're creating the transit corridors? All these blue dots right here, if you go down in the ledger, the blue dots are the activity centers. So if you've driven on 135th, say Leawood, and you go west, that's a transit corridor. You go down, you see all that high-density mixed use that they're building. Leawood, along that corridor, has changed all their land use documents. Okay, here's a picture. 95th is also a transit corridor. This is a vision of what they want this project to look like. It's a perfect picture of smart growth. So you have the road here. Here's your activity center right here. That's going to be your transit stop. You can't really see but just take my word for it. This down at the bottom, that is going to be your retail commercial. And then on top are your apartments and condos. See all of them all over here? This is your common open space. So you're going to have, you know, people walking dogs, you know, barbecuing or whatever. It's just going to be great. It's going to be great. Notice these right here in this picture. Those are called green roofs. Now, green roofs, the feds are actually handing out money for the green roofs. Now, in this picture, it has beautiful grass and trees. But if you're a sustainable community, what are you really going to be growing up on your green roof? Your food. Somebody said marijuana once. I thought I was... But it wasn't at a church, though. Here's another. Actually, there used to be a doctor's office right here. They totally changed the land use here. They moved them out of business, and this is what they're building in Gladstone. Again, you have your retail down here, commercial, and then you have your apartment and condos, limited parking. The residents and the shoppers have, in this particular project, have to share the same parking. The M150 corridor in Lee Summit, I put some verbiage down here just to let you know how regulated that we're talking about. Okay, so if you have a single-family home, your turf can exceed 50%. They're telling you how much grass you can have on your property. If you are in a multifamily mixed-use zoning, you can only have 30% grass on your yard.
Hey, Amy,
yes, sir. Gladstone. The slide before that, that's on 95th and Overland Park. Yeah. Okay, this is a page, this is a screenshot right from the M150 corridor. It is requiring smart growth. So if you own 1 to 5 acres, you can no longer build a single-family home because you have to have two uses. That is the regulatory taking of somebody's property. Here, okay, so we have the M150 in Lee Summit. What's the community right to the west of Lee Summit? Uh-huh, it's Grandview, Missouri. On the M150. Well, look what they've decided to do. A sustainable development corridor development plan. See? They're putting in the puzzle pieces. They're putting them in. And then it says something to shift from auto-oriented to pedestrian. It has the whole lingo right there. Okay, this is, so I got online. I love doing research. And I found the request for proposal online. And the request for proposal, it went out on January 12th of 2011. Okay? And they were requesting a sustainable development guideline plan. When was the public, remember, this is your plan, right? The public was never even invited to a meeting until 2013. But they already knew what they were going to get. Sustainable development. Because they took federal dollars that had strings attached to it. Didn't matter what you said, it was going to be sustainable development. Here's just some language from the corridor plan. Again, mixed use, increased density. It becomes a place where you what? Live, work, shop, play, ever without what? Getting in your car. Yeah, preserve contiguous. Open space for environmental corridors and recreation. Will we still have airplanes? Yeah, I guess if you're rich enough. I'm going to skip that. Okay. This is Portland. This is a real slide. I do not make this stuff up. Seriously. I know some of it sounds crazy, because it is crazy. It's crazy. Okay, Portland. See this red right here? Urban growth boundary. Portland has decided if you're inside that red line, that's where we're going to build. If you're outside that red line, no more building. Because what? That's now going to be the food shed area. That's where the sustainable community will grow their food. Well, what does it do to it? The property inside, see, they're changing use. They don't have to take your property. They change the use. And the value is in the use. So, if you're inside the red line, what's going to happen to your property? Skyrocket. Who's going to, only people who can afford it are the developers that are getting incentives to build smart growth. What's going to happen to the property outside the urban growth boundary? It's going to go down. And they're doing this all, I mean, on the West Coast, it's really, 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 really bad. Okay. I'm going to skip this. I have some of these slides in for a Farm Bureau meeting. But, you know, you see on bags and stuff now, like the sustainable forest or sustainable farming or whatever. You think that sounds good? Don't buy that stuff, I'm telling you. Because the only way you can get that label is if you've subjected yourself to being inventoried and monitored. And they will continue to say, you have to do this and this and this for you to be able to qualify as a sustainable forest seller or whatever. So what they're doing is they offer financial incentives. Like in the cattle industry, they're giving an extra dollar to people that are part of this particular program. So they get you in there, but then they start inventorying and monitoring you to start controlling your behavior. Regulatory requirements and certification, they're collecting data as they're doing it. So be very conscientious of products if they say anything sustainable on it, because what you're doing, the people that are trying to operate outside the system are being squeezed out. Okay. Here is Julian Huxley. He's a big player in this. He's dead now. But he was a eugenicist. He was the founding director of UNESCO. So Common Core is chapter 39 of Agenda 21. Pierce Publishing, who prints many of our textbooks, their Common Core line. That's when I read my son's textbooks. That's how I found out about sustainable development. Okay, and then he was also the founding member of the World Wildlife Fund. It says, we envision a world where all beef is raised in a way that is environmentally, socially, and economically sustainable. What do we see right there? Just the three pillars, right? So in 2010, they helped establish the Global Roundtable for Sustainable Beef. So NGOs, they put pressure on McDonald's, okay? So McDonald's, they decide, okay, 28% of our company's carbon footprint is due to our cows, beefing production, all that. So they decided to be more conscientious. But they didn't really know what sustainability was. So who did they invite to help them understand all this? They invited leaders from activist groups such as WWF and Greenpeace. Okay? And here's the children's version of Agenda 21. There's a chapter in here on major organizations that are helping to implement Agenda 21. You see, there's only four symbols up here in this one corner, two of which is Greenpeace and WWF, and that's who McDonald's has gotten in bed with to understand what sustainable development is. Is that jaw-dropping or what? Okay, this is from our good friend Curtis Bowers. I asked him if I could use this slide in my presentation because it sums it up so beautifully within kind of a graphic. So you have Karl Marx, and really this all goes back to Nimrod. This is the Babylonian system. This is God created nations to keep us from tyranny. Just like our founders from the Bible got our three branches of government to protect us from tyranny. And God has always resisted men who wanted global governance. This is not, no Christian should, in my opinion, this is my opinion, knowing what I do about the Bible, should ever be an advocate of globalism. The abolition of the sovereignty of nations. Because this is trying to elevate a system above God's, and He, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, will be the only sovereign over the earth. Okay, so you see here this, the Gro Harlem Brundtland here. We got our buddy Maurice Strong, Alger Hiss, Mikhail Gorbachev. The Earth Charter, see how that, I just love how he put all that together. Okay, so what they're doing is they're centralizing and standardizing every single system. From the smart meters on our home, to our driver's license with real ID, to the federal takeover of our education with Common Core, and I can go on and on and on. Centralize and standardize for the purpose of inventorying, monitoring, and controlling all natural resources and human activity. So when the lines of authority are blended, power will always default to the higher power. So if sustainable development were a pie, this is what it would look like, because the tentacles are getting into every arena of life. And what can we do? We have to get involved locally. You've probably heard the term global to local. Do you know who really, I don't know if they came up with it, but they're the ones that really used it, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. That's where that term came from. It says that all political power, this is the Missouri Constitution, is vested in and derived from the people. That's you and me. That all government of right originates from the people, is founded upon their will only. But you know what? You have to be in the game. You have to be active. You have to be involved to have your will. Because let me tell you, there's tons of these NGOs and lobbyists that could care less about your individual liberty, your individual freedom, your unalienable rights that you're born with from God. And you're the one. Liberty doesn't have a lobbyist except for you. It doesn't pay well, but its rewards, its rewards are priceless. And I'm going to end with Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Silence in the face of evil is itself evil. God will not hold us guiltless. Not to speak is to speak, and not to act is to act. So that's it. Thank you.
That wasn't good, Amy. That was great.
Oh, you want to put
questions?
Okay.
Agenda 21 is to depopulate the planet. And so they're doing it by confining us, forcing us to eat contaminated food, and
Well, sustainable, see, Agenda 21, there were a lot of critics about Agenda 21 because they hit on a lot of subjects, but they kind of left the depopulation portion of it alone in that particular document. But that is definitely the sustainable development end game, depopulation, because they definitely want us vaccinated. Yes. The end game is to reduce population because they've already identified what the quote unquote carrying capacity of the Earth is, and so that's definitely part of the plan. It's not talked about very widely in very many circles because that does sound a little conspiracy theorist. You know, but the hardcore people, that was their main problem with this document, that it didn't touch on it as much as they wanted it to be touched on. But again, incrementalism. It's important that we know what the end game is and not maybe just start talking about the end game before we talk about all the other stuff that people can really see right now. So we have to be very conscious of this because this, like I said, this, when you talk about it, it does sound crazy. So we have to be very careful about what part of it is kind of mainstream right now and open people's eyes to, okay, this is what they really mean. This is, we need to, attack here. We don't, in my opinion, we don't need to go for the depopulation part right now. You know what I'm saying? Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then, can you speak to I've heard about this carbon, what's his thing?
Carbon tax
or credits or something?
Yeah.
And I understand he owns.
It's a huge thing. They actually want that to be a global thing, a global tax. It would be based on carbon. Now, California has already implemented some of that global taxation. Greenhouse gas taxation. So yeah, it's making inroads, and Bloomberg is huge into this. And actually, right now, he was the mayor of New York, and he's a special envoy to the United Nations. And speaking of New York, I don't know if you heard the interview with de Blasio this week. He's a communist. But he said that he was complaining about Americans' laws, how they favor private property. And he said, people want government to have more control to decide the height of buildings, what should be built, the rent, and who lives there. He said that in an interview this week. Yes. I actually ordered this on Amazon. Yeah. And if you order this one, you have to be very, very careful when you order this one because there's a shorter version. Make sure you get the full. This one is much harder to find. This one. Yeah.
We just moved back from Idaho.
Uh-huh.
And during our time out there, there actually was the farmers and the ranchers were out there. And unfortunately, 12 of them were incarcerated because they would not let their property go to the government.
The Bundys? Are you talking about the Ammons and the Bundys? Yeah, I'm following that pretty closely.
It was heart-wrenching what was happening out there.
Yeah. And then the FBI killing Finnegan. Yeah, that's really. And most Americans don't understand what's really going on.
They
get it. Yeah. They're fighting for the way of life. This is what it is. They want to destroy the American way of life.
Yes, that's what was that.
Yeah.
Very
yeah. Yeah. I mark up and I go back and refer to it. So I like having the physical copies. It's just easier for me than doing it online. But, you know, you're probably not going to be a nerd about it. Yeah. The deep state? Deep state.
How did they get this, their power, their invisible, how did this transfer of authority go to them when they don't have name, they exist, and we can't see them, we can't vote against them? I don't see how did it enter into the arena of the people, the courts, and the system, we can't.
Because the good people aren't in the Seven Mountains, really. He sees, now I've never talked to Trump, but I study it quite, you know, watch him quite a bit. He understands some of it, like he pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord, which was totally sustainable development, you know. But there is, and we need to pray about this, there is a real struggle within the administration between the globalists and the patriots. And I really think with Bannon leaving and who is the other guy that just left? Oh, yeah, Gorka. I think I'm a little concerned about that. So we really, and I really believe that his daughter, Ivanka, and Jared, they are globalists. So we really need to pray for the president and pray that doors will open for people that would hold the Judeo-Christian foundations of this country up and not, you know, go into these global arenas. So that really needs to be a point of prayer for all of us. Yes?
Just a bit of a side note. I lived in New York for many years.
Uh-huh.
And there is, you know, God's numbers are 777.
Uh-huh.
The devil's numbers are supposed to be 666.
Uh-huh.
So they have a property called 666 Fifth Avenue, owned by the Kushner family.
Wow. Yeah. You won't be, when you start tracking down Soros money, it will blow. He is evil. He is. And he funds us, you know, like Black Lives Matters, you know. They do sound good. Center for American Progress, you know, Media Matters, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, yes. I'm telling you, every city is involved in it. You don't have to be a member of ICLEI. ICLEI is a huge, it speeds up the process because you have an attentive partner and they put you on a deliberate, what they call a milestone program, like when Lee's Summit. The first milestone is to do a community inventory, and they inventory everything. How many people live there, how many vehicle miles travel, how much utilities our purchase within that community, how much gas. I mean, it goes on and on. And we use their software, and it goes to Germany. I mean, just that alone, that is like dangerous. I think it's dangerous. You don't even have to know the rest of it. You know, and so, you know, so we had done that. We had done milestone number 2, and then milestone number 3, they want the city to do a sustainability action plan. And we had one written. They had it written, and it was in committee, and we were able to kill it in committee. So we've been able to stop a few things, but I don't care if you're a member of ICLEI or not, every city has their toe in this stuff.
So what's the agenda?
Inventory, monitor, and control all natural resources and human activity. And centralize and standardize. So all you have to ask yourself, just at the very basic level, is this centralizing and standardizing a system? If you can say yes, I have never, ever looked into something and not found it being part of sustainable development. And its purpose is to inventory, monitor, and control. And the economy part, what the tool they're really using, and they decided to do this in 2012 at a UN conference, is to use public-private partnerships. Now, public-private partnerships might sound good. They might sound like free markets. They are not. Stay away from them when at all possible, because what happens is it gives the force of government to a private entity, and it lets government hide behind that private entity. So what they're trying to do from coast to coast right now is, and I don't want to go into the history of roads, but they're trying to raise money for infrastructure. Okay, if you just have 1 second. So, whether you realize it or not, your transportation dollars, they're diverting 25% of it to sustainable development for your bikes, your walking paths, et cetera, et cetera. So, if they're doing that, you got a shortage of money for your roads and bridges, right? So, what are they going to have to do? Raise your taxes, or their other solution is private-private partnership. You go into a partnership with a private company, and all these tolling companies are foreign companies, okay? And they're going to put tolls. They want to put tolls on all the roads. Inventory, monitor, control. And in the MAP 21 program, that's a transportation program, as of October of 2016, all tolls. Now, don't get confused. I know I'm getting in a deep subject, so I'm trying to like give you enough information. Tolls on interstates are not the same as tolls on turnpikes. They're totally different animals, okay? So don't confuse those two. But in the MAP 21, all tolls on interstate highways had to be interoperable from coast to coast. So they're collecting data. They have the potential of collecting data to know when you're traveling, where you go, etc., on these toll systems. So it's global governance. Global governance. That's what it is. Everybody's going to be using the same regulation, the same rules. Yeah, and people get distracted. Oh, they get distracted about this government. You know, we're just going to have this one leader or whatever. You don't have to have that. If you have global governance, you don't have to have that. Yeah.
A couple things. So we did a catering order last Thursday, and it was for KU Med, the medical students.
Uh-huh.
Reduce, recycle, reuse. And it just hit me like, man, that's really getting indoctrinated. certification that they can't even have a bottle of water, which can be recycled, but they can't even order one. I mean, it's against their bylaws. The other thing is the development in Longview, Longview East development, is a perfect example of what you're talking about as well, because they're laying, they're going to have a, I mean, it's all multi-use and mixed use and density. You know what I'm talking about?
And they're giving away our tax dollars. They're TIFing it. They're CID in it.
They're building they're about to build a 7-theater movie center.
Now, the funny thing about that new Longview, see, that was Gale Properties originally. He did Bridalwood, Winterset, all that, you know, the regular single family housing, and then he did new Longview. New Longview went bankrupt, so now it's not owned by Gale Properties anymore. But they got all the TIFs and renewals and all that. Lee Summit, there people aren't paying attention. Yeah, they think I'm crazy in Lee Summit. They do. They think I'm crazy. But then it goes against, you know, it's the whole group thinks, you know, they do all of this by democracy. You know, we don't live in a democracy. We live in a constitutional republic. It protects even one person. Okay, so they do all these consensus meetings, you know, the democratic process, but all that does, it isolates any dissenting voice, and then if you're the dissenting voice, then you're ostracized and ridiculed and so that's why we need more, you know, we need a small army to go in. If we cannot control our own backyards, if we can't control our backyards, what are we even paying attention to at the federal level? We can hardly affect change at that level. We can at the local level, but there's people that, you know, they don't care. They don't care. And if they do care, they don't care enough to do something about it. That's where I find my frustration is that, you know, we're talking about our backyards. Seriously. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I think, are we done with questions? Thanks. I'd like to know what the younger people thought of this. Did you identify some of this? Yeah, they have been talking like our cars are bad or, you know, we need to, because they're making you think like you're the saviors of the world. You know, if you will just change this behavior, if you don't live in a single family home, if you recycle a little bit more, whatever, you know. You guys are just looking at me like, oh. Well, cows, they're putting these bags on cows to capture their flatulation so they don't emit greenhouse gases. You can go on the edit. They put these bags on the poor cows. Okay, guys. Yeah.
Can I speak to the kids' thing?
Yeah. They're being indoctrinated. They don't question it at all. They're just being taught how to think, what to think. They're not being taught to be thinkers anymore. That's very, very dangerous. And that used to be what education.